Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome back to Whiskey Congress. We have another whiskey to talk about. So in the past, I talked about my favorite cheap bourbon, and that is Ten High. Today, we're reviewing Steve's favorite cheap bourbon, which is Heaven Hill.
Yep.
Now, Heaven Hill does have other offerings. As far as I know, Ten High does not. I'm drinking a Manhattan made with it. I think it's a really good whiskey for Manhattan. I'd give it an 87. And for a, I think I paid, for a 1.75 liter, I think I paid $25. Mm-hmm. So $5 more than my Ten High, but still very low price point and a solid, decent bourbon. It's, you know, nothing special. Kind of like we talked about with Jameson last week. It's a kind of whiskey you don't mind taking a shot of. You're not disrespecting it, but you can still sip it, and it's pretty smooth. Like I said, 87 is my score.
I give it an 88. I just think overall the flavor profile is really good. You know, initially it's soft. It's sweet, but not too sweet. There's some vanilla, but, you know, there's maybe some fruity, you know, cherry flavor in there a little bit, not too much. It's not aged very long. I think it's maybe 6 years or so in there. I like it. There's not a lot to talk about. I mean, it's cheap. It's easy.
It's a solid, cheap bourbon.
But it's, like I said, a good everyday, you know, everyday drinker. I have a couple, you know, I've got the, next week we'll do the Bottle and Bond version, which is a little bit stronger. You know, we've talked about in the past what bottle and bond means, and they actually are no longer making that bottle and bond, and I have two bottles of that. So one, I'll definitely tuck away a little bit longer than the other.
All right.
But we will probably review the one that I already have open, and we'll talk about it there. But I mean, Heaven Hill, if you're looking for something, you know, easy on the wallet but doesn't taste too bad, you can make a Manhattan with and, you know, drink with your friends and not worry about losing the good stuff, then there's a good option.
Agreed. And it also happens to be the shot of choice at one of your favorite dive bars, where I think it's, what, $2? Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
I think it's $1 during power hour.
That's healthy. Give you and I a chance to drink shots for $1. Right. Nothing bad will happen there. Interesting week in politics. Before we get into this week in Trump, which I'd like to keep to a minimum because it's so beaten. I've had time on my hands this week, so I've been watching way more CNN and Fox than I normally would, and I'm trumped out, to be honest with you. But there are a few goodies we can't just skip by. But anyway, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has missed two sessions. She's recovering from cancer surgery, and we talked about a bit before we got on the air that, you know, what do you expect when an 84-year-old woman or whatever she is comes back from surgery? She's not going to bounce right back to her feet and take on one of the most important jobs in the country. Having said that, she's an old lady who's had surgery, and I mean, she's the left's white knight right now. And I don't know that she's going to go the distance of Trump's term.
Well, I mean, we don't know it.
Right.
And
we know she won't give up.
No, I mean, she's definitely going to fight. That's definitely going to be her part of her legacy is just her willingness to fight and continue to drive forward. So the reality is her age, and clearly there are some declining health concerns. She is supposed to make a full recovery, but at her age, you don't know. There could be complications and things could go south pretty quickly. That being said, if something does happen and she is incapacitated or dies, then, and it happens in the next 2 years, Trump will have another, he'll have another opportunity to put another justice in. And this goes back to the fact that there are consequences to losing elections, and the Democrats and Hillary Clinton really shot themselves in the foot. When you look at the court and how it was previously configured, and you looked at the age of the justices, and you looked at where we were, this is why this election was so critical. And for Hillary and company to you know, like, yeah, there were Russian interference, okay, fine. And yeah, Trump came out of nowhere, okay, yeah, fine. But there were plenty of things on Hillary's side that she and her campaign did wrong that cost them this election. You know, and people want to say...
Just Hillary being one of them.
Well, yeah, and people want to say, well, Hillary was attacked and no one's been attacked like Hillary was attacked. Okay, yeah, sure, fine. That's all well and true. But nonetheless, she still was right on the verge of winning this thing. You know, I mean, oh, she won the popular... Yeah, but listen, you can piss and moan about the Electoral College all you want. We don't need it. We need it. Fine, whatever. But the rules were what they were.
Sure.
Right? Like, so, you know how the game is played. Yeah, I've never argued that. Right, I mean, and it's not directed at you, but what I'm saying, the rules were what they were. And so, you needed to win in some states in the Midwest and down South, and you didn't put the energy in to win them. You either made some assumptions that you had already won them, or someone in your crew who was supposed to keep track of the math didn't do it right, and you ended up losing, right? And so not only did you lose, but you lose the opportunity to put in, for sure, two Supreme Court justices, maybe a third, and possibly a fourth, because I've heard rumors that Clarence Thomas is, is considering retiring while Trump is in office to ensure...
So that he'll be replaced by a conservative justice.
Right. I mean, you know, again, strategy. So again, folks, there's consequences to taking these L's, right?
Yeah.
And again, Democrats and the progressive left can be as pissed off as they want, but you have no control over this situation at this point in time because all you have is Congress, and that's not going to be enough to stop Trump from getting in his next Supreme Court justice if Thomas were to retire or something were to happen to Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
So I think we're both on the same page that when Obama nominated Merrick Garland, it was a Bush League shitty move by the Senate Republicans to not even get him to a vote. Having said that, the Democrats can't play the same game. They don't control the Senate. So if...
And again, consequences to losing elections.
Yep.
You, guess what? Yeah, it was an uphill battle, and you know didn't have a good chance, but either way, you didn't win the Senate. You didn't flip the Senate in the midterms. And, you know, people have kind of come at me on Twitter like, well, I mean, we picked up a lot of ground in Congress, and if you look at the,
great,
you know, Democratic, blah, 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 like, okay. But, again, I thought this was, I mean, the Senate is really where you need the power, especially if there's another Supreme Court justice on the line, which is my argument, you know, after the midterms. And people kind of shrugged it off. And now we're looking at a situation where, like, even if it happens close to the election, right?
Then yeah.
Do you think...
They will power someone through...
Right. I mean, it'll happen
2 weeks
so
before
quickly,
the election.
Right. I mean, it'll happen so quickly. And you know, no one, you know, especially if it's a male, and I could easily see them going with a female this time around to avoid what happened with Kavanaugh. You know, but even if they go with a male, if they try to trot somebody out there and say, oh, this person was sexually harassed, whether they were or weren't, no one's going to buy it. Right. I mean, like no one's going to buy it. And even if they do, like it's going to take less time for the Senate to get this over and done with than it did with Brett Kavanaugh.
Sure.
I mean, that's just the reality of it. You know, I mean, unless he nominates fucking R. Kelly, like, I mean, it's just, I mean, it is over and done with, you know, that the person's going to get nominated in record time.
I can't look at you right now.
It's hard to, I don't really want to go into the R. Kelly thing.
Good. I don't either.
But, okay, so I will say this about R. Kelly. I mean, it's a terrible transition.
I'm not going to go into R. Kelly. Okay, here I go into R. Kelly.
I'm going to do it. So there was a, I think it was on Lifetime. There was a documentary on R. Kelly. It's called Surviving R. Kelly. And it talks, you know, there are people who, you know, openly talk about just how much of a predator he was and how, I mean, he just him abusing his power and taking advantage of young girls. There's a mixed bag with the story because I think I lived in Chicago. I was in Chicago when he was being prosecuted for the piss tape, if you remember from the Dave Chappelle skit.
Of course I remember the piss tape.
And I was there, and, you know, I was literally in the building when he was being prosecuted. I was with the public defender's office at the time. And, you know...
I'm guessing he did not use the public defender's office.
No. But I learned a lot about, I mean, being so close to it, you know, was able to learn a lot about the case and everything like that. And in my opinion then, and it has never changed, is that the fact that he was able to walk was a complete miscarriage of justice. And I thought it was, it showed everything that's wrong with our legal system. I thought it was an embarrassment. I've never been able to look at R. Kelly the same. From the time the charges came up. There were accusations about R. Kelly with Aaliyah years ago, and I don't know if you remember Aaliyah, but she was a young R&B singer, very talented, very pretty. She died in a plane crash. Somewhere in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
In the early 2000s, gone way too soon. She was, you know, one of the, really probably one of my first, you know, star hip-hop crushes, if you will. But all that to say with R. Kelly, this guy just, I've known for a long time who and what he is. The thing to say now is like, oh, people have known for a long time and you're only just now getting mad about it.
People knew about Kevin Spacey and Harvey Weinstein and Bill Cosby. Okay, fine.
Well, you're right. I've known about R. Kelly for a long time, and I was working for the public defender. That was the one time that I said, listen, I'll flip to the other side and I'll do whatever I got to do to help you guys put this guy away. It was kind of said, you know, jokingly between, you know, me and the prosecutors at the time. But, I mean, I was dead serious. I mean, I just thought that this, I mean, everything that there was, and there was stuff that couldn't even be introduced into evidence for various reasons, that just showed you how just fucking despicable he was and is. So none of this is new to me. And, you know, someone told me via social media, like, oh, you need to have that same energy. I was like, let me just stop you now with this whole same energy bullshit. I've got the same energy for Kevin Spacey. Throw his ass in jail. I don't give a fuck. Right? I mean, Usual Suspects is still a good movie, but that doesn't make him less of an asshole. Right.
And House of Cards is still a great show.
Right. I mean, like all these, like, I mean, I can separate the two very easily. Throw him in the jail, throw him under the jail. Harvey Weinstein, throw him in the jail, throw him under the jail. Polanski, Woody Allen. I don't know how Woody Allen has gotten away with it for as long. I mean, I think we may be at a statute of limitations now with him and however fucked up that situation is.
I mean, he's a creep, but I don't know that he broke a law.
That girl was pretty fucking young.
Yeah, she was young, but she was like 19 when he was 60. I think there was age of consent issues with that one. It was still creepy because it was his wife's daughter.
Age of consent when okay, she was 19, whatever. Yeah, but I mean, you think honestly he turned 19 and was like, oh, all of a sudden I'm attracted to you.
Well, the age of consent in New York, I think, is 16, which might be gross, but maybe it's 18, I don't know. Frankly, it's never been relevant to me, so.
Good, but, I mean, thanks, good to know. But, I mean, I just think with a lot of these things, let's not try to frame this in the way that's most beneficial to the accused. I mean, there's a whole process called grooming. That doesn't happen overnight. It happens over time. And I think with a number of these people, you know, who are saying, oh, well, she's 18 and I'm, you know, 35, so it's cool. Well, you didn't meet her when she was 18. You've known her for a while, and she didn't just look at you and fall in love the minute she turned 18. So let's be adults about this and recognize that you're a fucking predator and you're disgusting and I hate you.
Well, it's good that we're not going to talk about R. Kelly.
But anyway, I mean, but those are the sort of things, like, you know, I think it's important that we do recognize it and just say, listen, I don't condone any of this.
Right.
I didn't condone it then. I don't condone it now. Who knows what happens with him in this whole thing?
You want to do predictions? I'll do mine. He walks.
I know people are looking into charges, and I don't know what charges they're looking into. I know it's based off of the documentary. Who knows where you can get with that? Trying to verify the witnesses and. I don't know enough about where they're at now and what state is looking into the charges or what jurisdiction and, you know, what the statute of limitations, all that sort of stuff. So I don't know enough to make a prediction.
He pissed on a 15-year-old on video and walked. He's walking this time, Right.
I mean, we don't even know. I mean, he hasn't even been charged.
Then there's that.
So, I mean, that's why I'm saying, like, okay, fine, I guess. But as of right now, he hasn't been charged. So, you know, I mean, there's not much to predict.
Right. So,
anyway, like I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail us.
That's all right. That's all right.
We did.
That's what whiskey does. This week in Trump, again, I don't have much to say. The government shutdown keeps going.
Listen, the government shutdown, this is officially the longest government shutdown that we've had.
Right.
And I point a lot of blame at both sides here. I think, you know, every time Nancy Pelosi says walls are immoral, it makes my eyes twitch, because it's just such a ridiculous statement.
I actually agree with you on that. That is the wrong way to go about it.
Right.
I'm against the wall because I think it's stupid, because I don't think it will stop anything. The right wants to predict or portray that there are just droves of Hondurans, Nicaraguans, and Mexicans walking across the border willy-nilly at all points across the country, and we need this wall to stop. But that is fucking dumb. Now, the one thing the wall will stop is people crossing at various points across the New Mexico, Texas, and Arizona and California borders.
Let me just stop you. Talking to people who actually work, who deal with this on the border, I personally know ICE agents, what they'll tell you is, yeah, they need more wall, right?
Okay.
There are absolutely places that they know are soft spots, but because of just the limited manpower, they can't cover it, and they know that they have, you know, leaky access points. So they need it.
But what they need, I would say up the manpower, but okay.
But what they need before that, like, if you, manpower is... It helps, but it doesn't always help, right? I mean, because how many do you need exactly, and you're still at a disadvantage in that sort of situation, because no matter how many men you have, unless you're gonna have enough, you know, a man for every quarter mile, right? Like you're gonna have gaps, right? Like, so you can solve that by actually having a physical barrier. Okay. But before we even get to a wall and actually building that, why don't we fund and give them money to x-ray the fucking cars that are driving across legally? Because that's how your drugs and that's how your humans are getting in. Like, they're finding compartments, they're stuffing humans and people, living people that are alive, they're stuffing them in cars, in just inhumane ways and getting them through. Only 2% of the cars that come through the border illegally are fucking x-rayed. But that's how they find drugs. Now, we have a story here about two Green Berets down in South America who were trafficking cocaine up from, I believe, Colombia, and they were flying it, they were putting it on a cargo, on a military plane, and flying it to Florida. They had already done it once with about 20 pounds of cocaine. They were stuffing it in boxing heavy bags.
Okay.
You were doing
a speed bag,
right,
by the way.
Yeah, I know.
But you can't get nearly as much cocaine in a speed bag as you can a heavy bag.
Right. Well, I mean, you can get a decent amount of cocaine in a speed bag.
More in a heavy bag.
But they were putting it in heavy bags, and they were putting it on military planes, and then they were flying it back. These are two Green Berets. They're both, you know, about all American white dudes, Green Berets, down in Colombia, U.S. military, okay, who had initially flown in 20 pounds. And we're trying to fly in this time, they were trying to get in 90 pounds, right? So, which was worth about $1 million, right? I mean, and that's...
I'm surprised that's all.
Right, well, that's a conservative estimate on what it's worth, and I'm pretty sure it's probably worth more than that. So, think about that. Now, how they caught those guys was, this time, they were doing x-rays of different things that were coming, you know, onto the plane, and then that's how they caught them. Right.
I was hoping you'd tell me someone punched the heavy bag.
No, no, and then it just sprayed all over
everywhere.
It's just like, holy shit. No.
Damn.
You know, I mean, that workout goes from fucking 0 to 60 real quick.
You get the eye of the tiger real fast when you're pounding on cocaine.
So the point is, listen, let's get x-rays at the point of entry. I don't care if it slows things down, but that solves a lot of your problems and probably resolves not all, but a larger percentage of your drug and other issues that you're having at the border right there. Put the money there first, right? And people who work on the border will tell you this. This is where we need to put the investment, right? Yes, the wall will help, but this is where we're having the most trouble. This is where the most shit is coming through at that particular point of access, right? Then you want to put your wall up, okay, fine. put it up. I don't care. I said it multiple times. It doesn't really impact me one way or another, right? There's no illegal immigrant that's going to come across the southern border and take my fucking job, so I actually really don't give a shit. But I'm an American citizen, and I want what's best for everybody, and if we're all saying that we got to have this fucking wall, fucking put the wall up. I really don't give a shit. It doesn't really hurt anything. It ends up being just a symbol anyway, and you can look at it good, bad, whatever. I mean, there's enough. Listen, you can make an argument. Like, listen, the cartels down in Mexico are no fucking joke.
Oh,
they're fucking monsters.
Yes.
Right? They're fucking monsters. No doubt. They are fucking butchers and monsters. And I am not, I am just fine having a wall between us and that. That's just the reality. Right? And you can poo-poo it all you want, but you don't live in a border city.
True.
You know, I mean, well, it's easy to say.
Actually, technically, I do.
You don't. Not, you don't live on the southern border, right? I mean, like, you don't. So, I mean, it's fine. It's easy to say in fucking Cleveland, but you don't live in any of those border cities down in Texas. So, I mean,
look, if I lived in El Paso or
could you imagine just getting gas one day and looking across and just seeing like a group of people just coming across the border, knowing exactly what was going on? Like, look, I mean, I'm pretty sure you're tuned to change.
I've spent plenty of time in Southern California. All right. So I've been.
So am I.
And
it's a different world down there compared to up here.
It certainly is.
So it's easy to get lulled to sleep in the Midwest when we've got fucking snow right now, right? But I mean, it's easy to get lulled to sleep and say it's not a big deal because we don't see nearly the same impact that they do down there.
There are walls in San Diego, San Diego.
Right.
I'm not opposed to putting up structures to control immigration. I am opposed to the fucking idiotic notion that across the southern border, full wall is going to solve problems.
But this is that right there. Your mentality is as much a part of the problem as anything, because this is where you and Trump are actually thinking the exact same. You Trump individually himself, right? And you and that thought process are the problem, because anyone with any fucking sense, whether in his administration, which it's not many at this point in time, with the way that they're jumping off ship. Right, and anyone else who's paying attention to this knows that it's not going to be a 2,000 goddamn mile concrete border. And maybe that's what his dumbass thinks, but everybody else knows that's not what it's going to be.
Fine.
And $5 billion doesn't get you there.
No kidding. Not only does $5 billion not get you there, but 10 years doesn't get you there.
Okay.
You want to build a 2,000-mile wall.
So $5 billion to shore up security, to add personnel, to enhance technology. That's what they're asking for. He's saying it wrong. He's not saying it the way that you want him to say it, and he's not saying it the way that Chuck and Nancy want him to say it. So, in essence, they're holding federal workers hostage over fucking semantics.
Agreed. Oh, I agree with that. And the number of $5 billion doesn't faze me in particular, to be honest with you, because $5 billion does not buy you a 25...
So you admit that $5 billion is not that much. You admit that the wall's not going to be... It's not going to be a solid structure across the southern... you admit that it's probably good and needed in certain places. You admit that $5 billion is going to go to manpower and it's going to go to technology. You admit all those things that make sense.
Yes.
But you're still going to say, well, I support this because, like, I support not having a wall because blah, blah, blah. Like, that's where it gets ridiculous.
Well, you just agreed with me and said that the whole idea of a 2,000-mile wall is bullshit. So just say that. This is not a 2,000-mile wall. Whatever the number is, I don't know what the right number is, frankly. I would be spending my money on a lot of other things. I do, if they said, we'll give you this number, but if you think we're going to go along with the idiotic notion of a 30-foot-high steel or concrete, and concrete is stronger than steel, but steel is stronger than concrete, and the wheel was invented, because Trump is a diary-of-the-mouth moron. Fine. Cut the semantics out, get things up and running again. Fine.
That's more important than you, Chuck, and Nancy.
Don't put me, Chuck, and Nancy like we're in a fucking...
Well, you're the one who's putting yourself with them. I think you put me with them. You put yourself with them with, it's not going to be a 2,000-mile wall. You're smart enough to know that that's not what it's going to be.
Right.
And just based off the number, we know that $5 billion isn't going to get you to that wall. Right? Like, so So you at some point in time, you go in there and you say, if I'm Chuck or if I'm Nancy, I walk in there and I say, Donald, look, let's do this. All you got to say is the money's going to go to increased manpower. It's going to go to technology. It's going to go to physical barriers in some places, right? Like, I mean, and it's going to give us increased security along the way. That's a happy medium. It's not, and recognize that the wall, it's, you know, the idea of putting a 30-foot structure up, you know, with pointy ends, like something from Game of Thrones, is insane. We'll figure out what the design is going to be, but we'll give you the money for it. We'll work together on that design and how the money is allocated towards manpower and everything else. Can we just end this shutdown based on that agreement? And if
sold, fine.
It should be sold, right? And they're not doing that.
And this goes back to what we talked about last week.
And that's on them.
This is what we talked about last week, though, right? You said, can our government act like we're adults? No, they cannot, right? I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Right.
If
now, part of it is, though, Chuck and Nancy know that Trump, oh, you're at a point now where support for Trump is slowly dwindling, right? Now, his base is his base, but you have actual senators and you have congressmen on the Republican side who are starting to feel the actual pain of this shutdown, right? Because sure. of the constituents in their jurisdictions. So they're starting to try and figure out how much political, you know, clout are they losing because of this shutdown, right? And how is this going to affect them, even though that we just got through midterms, doesn't matter. You got an election coming up in 2020 for some of them, right? Sure. So they're trying to weigh, like, listen, this longest government shutdown, do I want to be responsible for this? Do I want this? How am I going to refute this, right?
In the past, shutting down the government has burned the party that was blamed for it. Historically, that has been the case. I don't know that will be the case this time. We'll see.
Well, right, and we'll see. But, I mean, for the right thing for the American people is for them to come to the table, right? Get through, cut through the semantics. Admit that this is just over how he's phrasing it, how he's saying it, and then let's get people back to work. You got, here's the thing. Now, I got two big reasons why this shit matters to me.
I know exactly why.
I got two big reasons. One, I got $90 million in deals hanging in the fucking balance because HUD's not open. Right? $90 million fucking dollars, Jim.
$90 million.
Right? $90 million fucking dollars. Hanging in the balance because HUD's not open. And I got nobody over there who's able to process my transaction.
Right?
That's nerve-wracking. Right? It's been nerve-wracking to me for a while, and now other people in my office are starting to realize why I was pulling what little hair I have left out. Well, I was just pulling beard hair.
Focus on the gray ones.
Right. I mean, it just, it's nerve-wracking. And then the other thing is, I'm going to Vegas on Thursday. I really need these TSA agents to...
Then there's three, because you're also going to Mexico in a couple
that's,
months.
Well, that's later down the line. I'm sure it'll be resolved by then. But, I mean, and allegedly... they're saying the passport thing, I should be good. So, I don't know. I'm focused... Right now, I'm focused on the hair now.
You're going to Vegas when?
Thursday,
all right.
So we'll figure out our recording schedule.
Yeah, there's that. And we're talking when you're in Vegas. We are doing that.
Good idea, bad idea.
It is a terrible idea that I cannot get on board with enough. All right, done with Trump. I'm fucking tired of being yet another Trump-bashing mouthpiece. We've had so many, and we talk about racial issues in the country all the time. And this week had a bunch of them. So first, Representative Steve King of Iowa, who is no stranger to... saying, I'm going to be nice.
Steve King is a racist. He says racist shit all the time.
All right, there's that.
And he literally, this week, he said, what's wrong with saying white nationalists? What's wrong with saying white supremacists? When did that become offensive? Quote.
Yes. Yeah. And then he came back.
White nationalists, white supremacists.
And there was another one.
When did that become offensive?
Right. And then, but first of all, that was not even close to his first... inappropriate or awkward or whatever you want to call it. I was trying to let him off with the word awkward language. But what I thought was interesting is, so he said, when did that become a thing? Steve King, it's a big thing. And he then came out and said, I'm apologizing for the heartburn I caused to the House of Representatives. There's talk of him getting censured. But to me, the big
moment... Ben Shapiro called for him to be censured.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Like, Ben Shapiro, of all people...
Who
like
is
Ben
about Shapiro, as right-wing as it gets.
Well, Ben Shapiro... Like, just last year, Ben Shapiro was defending Steve King. People say Steve King is a racist. He's not. And this is why, right? In his little blog. And then he comes out this year, and he's just like, all right, this is really racist, and he needs to be censured, and this guy needs to be voted out. He needs to be primaried out.
Wow.
And he's like, this is his opponent next year. Go give your money to the other guy. That's, I swear to God, Ben Shapiro. Wow. I actually retweeted it. It's on our timeline. Go check out our Twitter.
@WhiskeyCongress on Twitter and Instagram. And if Ben Shapiro comes out against a conservative...
Shapiro coming out against a conservative and saying that that guy should be primaried, that tells you a lot that all you basically need to know about the situation.
Wow. So the guy I want to talk about, though, is Tim Scott, Representative Tim Scott, who came out and said, as Republicans, if you don't want to get called racist and bigoted and whatever... Your silence during things like this is why that happens. And yeah. I think it's a completely fair statement.
That is fair. And he was one of the few that really came out in a timely fashion and said something along those lines. And that is what kills the GOP.
Because with minorities. It makes them real popular
right,
in Iowa.
Right. But with non-white people or, you know, hypersensitive white people, it's a really bad look for the GOP to just ignore stuff, right? One of your own has come out and is openly asking why white supremacy is bad and why people get so upset about it, right? I mean, and we know plenty of people who just like, well, it's not that big of a deal because, you know, they'll go to the whole, there's no such thing as race. Okay, fine. But, you know,
well,
but in this particular instance, right, I mean, this is... While no, it's a man-made thing, and this is how it's manifesting itself. And so that's what kills the GOP, right? A guy like a Marco Rubio should have came out guns a-blazing. Ted Cruz should have came out guns a-blazing. Guess what, boys? Because you're not white, right? You're white according to whatever the rules are for being white, but you're from fucking Cuba, right? And, you know, if your parents would have spent a little bit more time in Cuba, then Trump would be not letting you in right now. Right. So let's just, you know, I mean, but I mean, and then you have other, you know, brown and non-white GOP senators and congressmen who didn't say anything. Right. And that's what kills them. That's what kills them. Because it's just like, listen, fine, you're fiscally conservative and you're all about the military and all this other shit. OK, but when there are attacks on American citizens, whether it's politically or it's actual physical American citizens, the fact that you're silent about it just because you don't think that they'll vote for you or because you have this deep-rooted, you know, hate for them because of their skin color, which is where people go to, right? It's just like Mitch McConnell doesn't say anything about this. You got this guy with this big Southern accent who's, you know, from Kentucky. You're immediately going to think, well, it's because he's racist too. That's why he's not saying anything. Is that true? I don't know.
Maybe not.
And with Mitch McConnell, you can make an argument. It's probably not. His wife is Asian, right? So, I mean, Mitch McConnell may not be a racist guy. And I mean, he's probably not, right? And it's really shitty just to assume that he is just right. Because of these certain factors that actually mean nothing. But based off of American history and based off of just the culture that we live in now, it's a mess, right? Mm-hmm. Of just what people think of other people, right? Just like it's fucked up that black people will look at a person like a Mitch McConnell or any GOP senator or congressman and just assume that that person is racist, right? The other side of it is that there are a lot of white people who look at black people and have really, really negative thoughts and connotations about them just because of the color of their skin. You can't deny it. And here's the issue. Because you have a lot of people who were in their teens during the civil rights movement who are alive and kicking right now, who are in the Senate, who are in the Congress, who own and manage and, you know, our heads of multinational corporations, right? Those people who were screaming at the kids at the lunch counter, spitting on them, throwing shit at them, you know, they were young police officers who were, you know, who were sicking dogs on black kids trying to integrate schools. right? Those people are, you know, in positions of power right now. Maybe their minds have been changed. Maybe they have not. Maybe they've learned how to live copacetically with everyone, or maybe they've just learned how to speak differently. But what's in their heart hasn't changed, and we don't know that. But it's a fucked up situation. And so if you're not a racist and you don't believe that white supremacy is a good thing or is okay or shouldn't be offensive, or white nationalism shouldn't offend people, and you think those things are actually wrong, then you need to speak out when someone who has the same title as you openly says it and questions it.
No argument there at all. And I give Tim Scott credit because he is the only one I know that came out and actually said, this is the problem. And to be... let me try to make this even more... make this awkward. I understand... I talk to lots of people about our show and what we talk about. And a lot of them will say things like, I'm sick of being assumed that I'm a racist. Okay, I get why that sucks. Now, that doesn't mean that... How do I say this? A lot of people I know will say, I'm not a racist. Why am I thrown in this barrel? But then they'll do the MAGA stuff and all that other things. And I'm like, you're not speaking up when this shit happens. And I'm not talking about senators and congressmen. I'm talking about regular guys that we, you know, sit next to at the bar or whatever. When it doesn't bother you, you are feeding the beast.
Agreed.
Okay.
And then here's the flip side, going back to the wall.
All right. No.
One of the big arguments with the wall is, listen, even if the wall only prevents, you know, a small percentage of illegals coming through and a small percentage of drugs coming through, any amount of that is unacceptable, right? You know, 1% of illegal immigrants coming across the border is 1% too many, right? But I'm just saying, you don't want the wall, so I mean, you're not like...
Well,
but think of it, but I'm just saying, people who are making... this is people who are supporting the wall, their argument is that, listen, you know, one death by an illegal immigrant is one too many, and a wall prevents that from happening.
Sure.
Right?
One...
Okay, I'm not trying to get you to sign off. That's fine. So the flip side of that is, all right, well, what about one bad cop killing a guy unarmed in the street? Isn't that one too many?
Of course.
Right? Isn't that one too many? So by your logic of, you know, one too many illegal immigrants, you know, too many pounds of marijuana and meth and cocaine and heroin coming across the border, you know, like we need like any percent coming across, you know, at the southern border, if we can prevent it with a wall, okay, fine. So to that same notion then, if you have multiple examples of police abusing their power and murdering people in the streets, right? Well, it's only a small percentage, and if you look at the overall number of... No. But if you look at the wall, and you look at your argument for the wall, one is too many, right? So one of these... if you look at the overall interaction, no. I'm just using your logic here, right? Like, so shouldn't we probably look at overhauling our police system and how we police and how those situations are handled, right? If one is too many?
Like, that's my question. But you're never going to get to zero. And you just did something that I want to call you out on, because you linked marijuana with meth and cocaine. And to put those three in the same category to me, and I know fundamentally you agree with me, that they're not in the same category.
Okay, but
right? I mean, in terms of illegal drugs, but the reason I'm jumping at you in this one is I was watching Trump's...
Okay, and I'm literally throwing the fucking DEA handbook of scheduled drugs against you and saying, okay, fine, but they're not the same. Okay, they're fine, but according to this book, the laws...
And the book is bullshit.
Okay, fine, you can call it bullshit all you want, but you go out on the street right now with a fucking pound of cocaine and walk in front of a cop and see what happens. Chances are he probably just takes it from you and sells it.
Right.
But still.
Fine. But if I get caught with an ounce of cocaine versus an ounce of marijuana,
call me out on that is fucking completely ridiculous, because we've talked multiple times about how we feel about it, but it's still an illegal drug and a lot of it does come across the border. Like, okay, so.
Okay. So let's talk about Jeremy Capel. Capel, whatever. If we're not heated enough now, this should kick things up a notch. So if you don't know who this guy is, he's a weatherman in Rochester, New York. And while he was doing a broadcast, he mentioned something about Martin Luther King Park, and he said Martin Luther Coon King Park. He was subsequently fired. He was interviewed by Don Lemon and supported by Al Roker, who said he shouldn't have been fired or that they believed his apology. He did apologize. Now, we talked about this a couple days ago, and you were, I would say, angry with me when I said...
I wasn't angry, but Jim, the idea that that accidentally happens, how does that don't call him a coon, don't call him a coon. Like, why are you... what is your thought process?
Well, let me tell you, my initial thought process was that had to be a slip of the tongue. Now, hold on, let me please... Because I didn't know until I started looking into it and reading an article about it that amongst racists, calling Martin Luther King Martin Luther Coon was a common thing. I didn't know that was like a... Well, I mean, it doesn't come up in... And here's what's... I didn't know that James Earl Ray, his assassin, called him Martin Lucifer Coon. Like, in... So I didn't know that stuff. So the idea that you would use that word... Because the word itself is so... 1960s to me, that, like, when people use racial slurs today, that's not the one they use, right?
Yes.
Okay.
People still use coon.
Okay, well, I didn't...
Okay, fine, you're not up to date on...
I'm a lousy... I'd make a lousy racist, because I wouldn't... So I didn't know that was a thing. I did some research, and I read an article, and... Mike Greenberg from ESPN actually did the same thing a couple years back, 6-7 years back. Three or four other journalists did them. The only one who didn't get fired is Mike Greenberg. And my thought on this is, well, first of all, this is kind of like the Ron Burgundy thing, right? Ron Burgundy in Anchorman reads the teleprompter. No, I'm not going to stop.
I don't appreciate you making light of it the way that
hold
you
on,
are.
Hold on. Let me finish, please. Because the big thing to me is... What he said violated the trust of the people of Rochester. So, you know, Ron Burgundy said, go fuck yourself, San Diego, because he just reads a teleprompter, gets fired. This guy gets fired. Whether or not he had racist intent, the people that he's supposed to connect with and the station that he represents has lost his trust.
So you did your research on all these other anchors who have said this. How many of those anchors who called Martin Luther King, Martin Luther Coon, how many of them were black?
None.
Weird. That's surprising.
Look, Steve. Again, call me naive.
Martin Luther Coon. I mean Martin Luther King. I just don't get how you're just like total slip of the tongue. Happens to me all the time.
You're putting words in my mouth now.
I'm not saying that, but I mean, like, you're just kind of like brushing it off. Like, how could it not be a slip of the tongue?
Steve, like,
I don't get how you're rationalizing this.
Initially, that's what I thought, because I never thought of, the idea of using the word coon to talk about a black person just never enters my thought process.
Right.
And so the fact this guy did makes me think, all right, when he's at the golf club and he and the boys are joking around and, you know, on the 10th tee, do they call Martin Luther King Martin Luther Coon? Maybe. But to me, initially it seemed like one thing, and then I thought about it more, and I read the story, and I'm like, you know what? Even if it was accidental, it violates his ability to have the trust of his community. And the one that really piqued my curiosity was Mike Greenberg, because I find it hard to believe Mike Greenberg is a racist. Now, does that mean you don't?
I don't. Why?
Because I've listened to the guy for 10 years and he seemed like a good guy.
You don't know shit about Mike Greenberg.
You're right.
You don't.
You're right.
Right? He's a dude who's on the radio.
He's a prep school kid, I think. I mean,
Chicago. I mean, like, he worked in sports.
You know, he went to Northwestern.
He's a New York guy. You're right. But, I mean, he just, like, we don't know these people. We don't know these people from anybody. Just because they're on the, TV, radio, ESPN, whatever, we don't know them, right? We don't know why him and Golic broke up.
Yeah, we do. Sure we do.
No, we don't.
I mean, he took a job with a gig in New York City, and...
Yes, they're on different shows now because, yes, but why, like... There was something else
there. They paid Greenberg big money to take like a network start, like a...
Listen, all right. Okay. there's plenty of people who know that there were issues there before GetUp started, all right? Before even GetUp even became a thing. Right, like this has been an ongoing thing. Like, remember, I brought it to you that they were broke. You had no idea, right? I mean, like this had been going on for years prior to their breakup. So my whole point is, think of Mike Greenberg. We don't know him, right? Somehow he managed to keep his job. Good for him, I guess. But it just I don't trust anyone as far as I can throw them until they prove to me otherwise, right? Like, so I don't care if you're on TV. I don't care if you make me laugh or if I like your mute or whatever, like, but once you violate that trust with me, then all right, well, okay, then it's dead. It's done. Right. And this whole thing, oh, well, it's just a slip of the tongue. Like I don't, and people I know don't have those slips of the tongue.
Okay. I mean, Al Roker and Don Lemon interviewed him and came.
Well, you know how I feel about Don Lemon. I do know how you feel about Don Lemon. Al Roker, who the fuck cares?
I don't know. I'm
Al Roker. Listen, if you would have came and said Cornel West said, okay. Well, okay, fine. But no. Not Al Roker. Not Al fucking Roker. Could he not read like 10 years ago? Like, I mean, come on.
What's that?
Yeah, Al Roker like broke down because he's like couldn't read like years ago, like 10, 15 years ago.
I don't remember that.
Just fucking Google it. I swear to God.
I'm not disputing you. I just don't remember it.
I'm actually curious how that shaked out.
How that shook out?
Because he's still, I mean, obviously he's still on today's show.
Yep.
You know what, just scratch that whole thing with Al Roker. I'm probably insane. I think, who knows where that came from.
Okay.
I think there was an issue with something, maybe I confused, I don't know.
All right,
I don't want to get in trouble, so, yeah.
You don't want Al Roker coming after you?
Right, I don't want to get attacked by Al Roker, so.
I do want you to get attacked by Al Roker. I think that would be the most awesome thing our show ever had. Was
viciously beaten by Al Roker.
Al Roker comes out, hey, motherfucker. That's so dumb. Just
cracks me across the eye with the bottle. Who can't read now, motherfucker? That's me, because I've got blood in my eye.
I love that idea. For what it's worth, I would...
Remember that Seinfeld episode with him on the subway?
With Al Roker?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it was like, he did like a little cameo, and he came out and like attacked somebody over his sub. It was like he attacked him over like a sandwich on the subway. It's the whole thing. Again, my Al Roker history is like sketchy. Like I remember all these things about him, but I don't have enough detail to like pin it down. But it was a Seinfeld episode. I promise.
I believe you.
That you can find on Google.
That I will look for when we get off the air. All right, man. We got the last upcoming NFL.
NFL
playoffs.
Yeah, the NFL playoffs are going right now.
Do we want to do Super Bowl predictions now and then modify?
Let's just wait till they fucking get there and predict the
and
score.
Predict and score? All right. And, all right.
You know, whatever. We'll have a little Super Bowl party. It'll be a whole thing.
All right.
But other than that, I'm good.
You want to wrap it up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. We've held people hostage long enough.
Fair enough. We apologize for doing that. Heaven Hill was the Whiskey of the Week. We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Pause.
Oh, shoot. Yeah.
Hold on. Pause. Bruh. Shelly?
Yes.
I feel like I'm a part. Like, I feel like Clark Griswold in
Christmas Vacation.
Part of the Jelly of the Month Club.
We are now members of the Michael Wood Jr. Jelly of the Month Club.
Right. Yeah. So our buddy, Mike Wood Jr., who is out on the West Coast now. What type of berries are those?
It was prickly pears.
Yes. So he's got these prickly pears out there. I guess you pick them off cacti?
Yep, right? In Arizona, yep.
And he sent us some different jellies with lemon and honey and all that stuff, prickly pear. And we just got them yesterday.
Right.
I know yours came to your house, mine came to mine. Last night, I had a couple cocktails, but I remember that they were on my front porch at like 11 at night, and I tried a few. I think he sent like five different ones.
I think I only got three.
But they were really good. I threw them on Ritz crackers just because that was the first thing that I had, and the jellies were actually really good. So thank you to Mike Wood Jr. for his prickly pear jelly concoctions. I definitely use them for whatever I use jelly for.
I went out and bought English muffins today so that I could have them for breakfast So I tasted his OG with lemon. Was fantastic.
I just tasted the OG, and then I went the Stolen Goods. And Stolen Goods, like, Stolen's good. It, to me, it had, like, a little spice to it, but I don't know. He says it was, like, honey and something
else. Anyway, it was real good stuff. Thanks, Mike. He also sent another copy of Crime and Punishment in the 21st Century. That right. is available on Amazon, so if you're...
And the copy that I already have a copy, so I'm going to forward that copy that he gave me to someone else to read.
And I have a copy as well, so I'll do the same.
And then he sent us... I know he sent me...
Sent you. He didn't send me. Okay. So you got different jellies and an extra book. He sent you the...
Yeah, he sent me the Lewandowski book on Trump's enemies. I will read it as objectively as I can. You know, I think that I'll be honest with you. I think Corey Lewandowski, who was Trump's campaign manager, during the campaign, who was subsequently fired because he like manhandled a reporter. I think oddly enough, a reporter from Breitbart. this is my thing. He still has a decent relationship with Trump, and his job, which is, you know, analyst on, you know, the different networks right. is based on access, right? Like his value to Fox News, his value to CNN or MSNBC or wherever he shows up, his value comes to the access that he still has with the president. So anything that he writes, he's well aware of how sensitive the president and this administration is to negative criticism, right? Like, so if sure. you say anything negative about the president, if you say anything in any sort of light that doesn't highlight anything positive about the president, then the president will cut you off and immediately will, you know, banish you, you know, in front of everybody.
Call you horse face.
You know, call you out on Twitter and, you know, call you stupid and, you know, talk about how inept you were at your job, which is why you are no longer a part of his inner circle. Corey Lewandowski knows this well, right? Like, I mean, he watched it. He's been a part of it. So... he's not going to do anything that's going to hurt his access. So everything that, if he's going to talk about the president, he's definitely going to spin it in the way most favorable towards the president, right? And I don't think there's a way around that. So yes, I can read the book objectively, but there's a bigger game being played here, no matter what you think. And if you think that Corey Lewandowski is just this objective guy who's just sitting out there just... this is how I see things and observe them based off of, like, get the fuck out of here. You're more naive than I thought.
Do you think he wants more? Do you think he wants back in?
No.
Okay.
I think he's making good bank right now, and I think he's in a good place where he can be close enough where he's still in it. He can make decent money, and he doesn't have to worry about getting burned or getting hurt. As long as he plays...
that's the place to be, right?
Right.
Like, on the outside looking right. in with
he's
the...
Bill Cowher, right? Bill Cowher, former coach of the Steelers, does the network thing with CBS, makes good money, you know, can talk about his team a little bit, little critical, but still says all the right things and doesn't have to worry about it. Only works a few months out of the year, just has to go to New York, you know, every week for during the football season. And then after that, Bill Cowher's living the good life.
Yeah.
John Gruden, on the other hand, had that same deal. Right. And then he jumped back into the shark-infested waters, and now everyone's just like, you don't know what the fuck you're doing. You're a terrible coach. You're taking Oakland. You know, you're going to go to Las Vegas. You traded away all these players. He's under fire all the time. And reminding everyone, oh, by the way, you did get fired from Tampa because you sucked.
Yeah, and he's got $100 million to help him sleep at night.
Right. So who did win?
I don't think John Gruden's going, ooh, Steve, you got me. He's thinking, excuse me, while I roll around in this bed full of money.
Like he could actually fly here right now in a private jet, slap
with Al Roker.
With Al Roker. And like one of them can slap me with a bottle and Gruden can just throw money at me. He could throw money at me, right, that I could probably have, right? But it wouldn't even bother him. He's like, here's $100,000 for me to just piss on you. Get the fuck out of here.
And which brings us back to R. Kelly, and is a great way to end the show. Thanks again, Mike. Check us out, Jim at Whiskey Congress, Steve at Whiskey Congress. We're out.